Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Wednesday, March 27th. Our top story today, there are calls for a new bypass around Sittingbourne in a bid to ease traffic congestion in the town centre. Residents say the amount of homes being built there is causing the problem, along with ongoing roadworks. A major rebuild of the Stockbury roundabout on the A249 started in January 2022. Darren Wilkins works in the town centre.
If I drive in from Chatham, it's usually getting from Chatham to Sittingbourne is quicker than actually getting from the start of London Road into the centre of Sittingbourne to actually park. It can take me 20 minutes, half hour to get through there. It's ridiculous. And then obviously during the day, we go out on work and we've got to get in and out of Sittingbourne, and it can put so much time on our jobs, sometimes longer getting there to do the work and then get back in again. But it's getting to the point that I will prefer to get the train in. Even with the slight delays on there, actually, I know I'm going to get to work more on time than trying to drive in from Chatham. So it's really bad.
And I imagine, so it's paying for the train like an extra money you're forking out to sort of get to work, or how does it work out for you?
Yeah, and I pay for that every day. We do a short week and a long week. So on a short week, that's 4 days in, I'll just pay a daily ticket. But on a long week, which is 6 days, I'll do a week ticket. Obviously saves money, but obviously it's still paying extra to get to work rather than just driving in and sort of parking in some of the cheaper car parks.
So you're having to actually replan your whole day around this traffic situation. Yeah. How long has this been a problem for you?
Well over a year now, I'd say. Well over a year. And it's even worse since they started doing the Stockbury roundabout. That's the biggest thing, because obviously my journey is the M2. And as during the working day, a lot of our work's in Maidstone as well. Obviously, it's down there to go up Denton Hill, and it's just, we have to do a lot of planning about where we're going and making sure we're grouping our customers and making sure we're just making the best of our efforts to get out rather than just running down the rain and for one job and coming back again. It's just not
that simple.
No, not that simple.
So before this traffic was an issue, how long on a good day would it take you to do that route that you're doing now?
Well, the home journey.
Yeah.
Technically, I could usually do that on a good, clear route, 20 to 30 minutes.
And then at its worst?
At its worst, it can take me an hour. So that's why it's you don't know basically how long it's going to take. That's why with the train, it's, I know it might be a few minutes, but I will get here in time to walk through the door and open up before opening time. Mm.
Do you think that, what is the solution? Do you think there is one, or is it the fact that work, once it's done, will be good?
I'm hoping once the work's done, it'll do it. But I think some of the one-way system around here hasn't helped. Constant roadworks down the A2, always digging up, and it seems to be in the same place, and very often the same utility is digging up where they were like a week or so ago. There's this whole point, they're all meant to do jobs together, doesn't seem to happen. A lot of it is the roadworks and the temporary travel lights that pop up overnight or during the day causing problems. And I think they were talking about doing a bypass road 8 years ago, going round Sittingbourne and missing it, but obviously that never happened.
Caroline Gower grew up in Sittingbourne and says the town has changed a lot.
So obviously we're in Sittingbourne, you grew up here. What has the traffic been like since you've come back? How has it changed?
It's a lot worse. I mean, it takes about half an hour to get across town, whereas before it would, I just went down to Pets at Home and came back, and it just sitting at the traffic lights for about 10 minutes, just trying to get across that junction, whereas 10 years ago it probably took about half the time.
So everything's taking longer.
Yeah.
How's that impacting you, planning in your day when you need to do things?
Well, it is. I mean, I need to go around and see my dad now, and obviously I'm just thinking it's going to take me ages because he lives in Merston, so I've got to go either around Eurolink or up that, and I was sort of looking at the traffic going back there. It's going to take probably a good half hour to get here to Merston, and I could probably walk it in about the same time, because I walked there from the station before and it takes about half hour walking.
That doesn't seem right, does it?
So no, it's not, but that's...
And do you know why the traffic is sort of worse, obviously, with the development, or what is it?
I think, they've built so many more houses and they haven't done anything to the roads. It's the same roads. If not, there's more traffic lights, I think, than there ever was. It takes longer.
So would you say there is too much traffic on the road?
Yeah. And just not, and I think it's even worse at the moment because obviously you've got all the work on the A249. People trying to get out to Maidstone are going on the A2 and not going... because the M2 is normally closed because there's normally an accident on it and it's too small. It's not.
The sitting button's changed quite a lot.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. And there does need to be another junction, I think, on CM2 from, you know, I think they were going to do it sort of at the back of Batchard or something around there, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I think, but that would probably be a good thing to take a bit of the traffic out of the town.
Yeah.
But
It's changed a lot.
It has changed a lot, yeah.
Darren and Caroline there were both speaking to reporter Ellie Hodgson. I caught up with Simon Finlay, who's also done a lot of work on this story. Is there a sense from people living in Sittingbourne that this is the new normal and we can sort of say goodbye to the easy flowing traffic that people once knew?
I don't think the new normal would necessarily be something that they want to get used to, but it is something they're going to they're certainly having to put up with. I think in the piece that I wrote, I said that it was almost with a sense of grief that what was considered normal is no longer there. But for other people, it's just a sense of this seething, impotent rage that they feel because it's something that they have nothing they can do about it.
From their point of view, do they see any light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, not really, because once one set of houses has been sort of foisted on them by the government intends to foist even more. And then when they're built, there'll be even more again because there is this housing shortage that the government has identified. But the people who live in Sittingbourne and elsewhere in Kent will say that most of the people who are moving into these sort of executive-style estates are basically just people who are moving in from London because local people can't actually afford to buy them.
Mm. You've also been speaking to some of the local councillors in the area. What are their thoughts on having to meet these housing targets?
Well, they generally have the same kind of viewpoint that the targets are too high and that if you build houses on that scale, you've got to have the roads to actually help, you know, take those volumes of new traffic. And in Sittingbourne, there's talk of a north and south relief road, which would basically sort of take away a lot of that traffic. But the feeling is that by the time a relief road in both ends of the town was built, there would be so much traffic that it would be of barely no use anyway. So it's kind of this is the problem. The general feeling is that there's just too many houses and the locality cannot take the volume of traffic. It can't provide the school places, it can't provide the NHS capacity, and it can't provide things like GPs as well.
It sounds as though this relief road is being offered as sort of a solution to the problem, maybe a carrot being dangled, or it's going to get better because there is going to be this relief road. But as you say, it's by the time that goes in, it's going to have very little impact. Are there any other solutions on the horizon that you can see?
Well, the only other solution that there could be would be that they stop building houses. That's one solution. Instead of maybe sort of focus the attention, this is what people say, is that rather than building homes to sell, that you buy homes that people can afford to buy and or can afford to rent, affordable housing, social housing, council housing and that sort of thing. But with the relief roads, just to bring it back to that, that in order to get a relief road or two relief roads for the Sittingbourne area, you'd have to take 10,000 houses, and 10,000 houses probably equates to about 30,000 more cars.
Kent Online News.
A man has been charged following two armed robberies in Swanley. Carl Kanar is accused of holding up a Domino's in the High Street with an imitation firearm before threatening staff at an Asda petrol station with a knife and stealing cash. The 40-year-old, who has no fixed address, remains in custody ahead of a court appearance next month. It'll never be known what happened in the moments before a crash in Ashford that killed a 37-year-old man. The van Danny Humphrey from Essex was driving ended up on the wrong side of the A28 Great Chart bypass last October and collided with a lorry. An inquest has heard there were no defects with the vehicle or issues with the road surface. Figures just out show a 54% increase in the number of sewage spills across England last year. There were more than 14,000 storm overflows. Here in Kent, the highest number of spills was in Swalecliff between Whitstable and Herne Bay, which saw 118 spills, which totaled more than 923 hours. It's being blamed on the wet weather. Water companies say they're investing to improve the network. Sally Bird-Jones is from SOS Whitstable.
People choose to live here in Whitstable by the sea to have that incredible, you know, health and well-being benefit that you can get from living by water. Some people here make their living from it. Some people just use it for, you know, for pleasure, swimming, paddleboarding. jet skiing, you know, whatever it might be. And so far, you know, even this year, I know the statistics are for last year, but from the data we've seen so far this year, only 2 in every 3 days have actually been usable with the water so far this year. So yeah, the impact is severe. A lot of people use the water for mental health benefits, including myself. So, you know, there's a social element to it, but there's also, you know, a fantastic feeling of well-being when you're able to get into the water. And, you know, it's one of the few things in life which is currently free to, you know, walk to the end of the road and get in the sea. So having that taken away from us, you know, has a real sort of negative impact on well-being, on the local economy. And of course, under the water, which, you know, we're not able to see quite so clearly, is the impact on biodiversity.
I imagine it's going to impact on tourism as well, particularly as we come into the warmer weathers, people thinking that they're going to get away to the seaside. They see a story like this, they might think otherwise. They might go, no, I won't swim in the sea because it's full of sewage.
For sure. It's a common story all around the country at the moment. And, you know, potentially this is going to have an impact on international tourism, with people not wanting to come to the UK because our rivers and seas are so dirty. Yeah, on a local level, I think for people that have awareness of what's happening, there's certainly a reluctance to go into the sea. We have lots of messages from people visiting Whitstable asking us if it's safe to swim. And all we're able to do is point them in the direction of Southern Water's, you know, apparently real-time reporting, which is sometimes not that real-time, to tell them to check. And of course, the Surfers Against Sewage app, which you can download for free, which will also give information regarding recent sewage releases that can help people to make a decision about whether or not they're willing to enter the water.
Now, you touched on it a little bit before, as you said, water companies are saying, you know, last year we've seen record amounts of rainfall, and that has been a main contributor to the reason why we're seeing so many spills. Do you disagree?
The system was set up a very long time ago and obviously privatised over 30 years ago now. So, yeah, the system does take rainwater and sewage flow. So in, you know, in wet weather, yes, the kind of the flow to the treatment works will be massively increased. However, this is not a new story. And, you know, over the last 30 years, there's been plenty of opportunity for the water companies to invest in their infrastructure, which would then mean that, you know, this increased amount of rain has been predicted for a long time, as has population growth. So, you know, those systems that might have been built 50 or 60 years ago were not built to cope with, you know, the current weather patterns and the current amount of individuals, you know, needing to use those wastewater treatment plants. However, there's been plenty of time to fix the problem. So it's looking now like, you know, over the last 30 years, instead of spending money keeping up to date with, you know, making sure that the capacity is there, the water companies have instead been, you know, taking profit and rewarding shareholders. And, you know, now that there's so much fuss being kicked up about it, it's increasing the amount of our bills to pay for this problem to be resolved, which essentially feels like, you know, we've paid twice. We've paid the first time and that money's been taken off as profit, and now we're being asked to pay again to solve the problem. So it's understandable that, you know, a lot of people are getting very angry about this.
Kent Online News.
It's been revealed half of dentists based in Medway say they won't do NHS work. Almost 80 in the towns have been questioned and blamed financial pressures, too much red tape and difficulty recruiting and training staff. Dr. Alfred Colosvan owns the High Street Medical Dental Practice in Gillingham.
Before, we used to get paid fee per item. That means if a patient comes in and needs 3 fillings, you used to get paid for all 3 fillings. Since 2006, when they changed the contract, it's a UDA contract. That means if a patient needs 3 fillings, you get paid for 1 single item for 1 filling. That's when literally the majority of dentists, like myself, with over 20 years of experience, they moved more into the private sector. And that's what actually brought the waiting list to the level that they are today. Because if I'm going to ask you to work for 3 days and get paid for 1 day, I don't think that's suitable for anyone. So in the last 6 months, indeed, the government tried to change the contract. It's a little bit too little and too late. By increasing the value of the UDAs and making sure that new patients have been seen within allocation, they get paid more than the normal regular patients. The problem that we've got is the fact that there is loads of dentists who came from abroad and they overseas qualified, and the governing body, the GDC, takes quite a long time to process the application in order to be registered with the GDC to be able to perform dentistry in here. And they work at the moment as a dental hygienist or dental therapist. So the only option that I can see, because in every sector nowadays we have issues with recruiting, when the GDC will be able to process this application faster and allowing them to be able to be registered as dentists, that will actually increase the number of dentists that will be able to provide NHS dentistry.
A Bethesden resident has been fined £400 after household waste was found dumped in a country lane. The suspect admitted to paying a complete stranger to dispose of the rubbish, which was fly-tip in Shaddockshurst. From April 1st, the penalty for fly-tipping will increase from a maximum £400 to £1,000. Residents near Dover have hit out at vandals who have been burning library books. The charred debris was found strewn along railway bridge pathway in River. Around a dozen books had been either torched or torn up.